Hello and welcome to another edition of the Around the Corner podcast, where we talk about all things Cleveland Guardians minor league baseball and prospects. I'm your co-host, Matt Schlichting, joined as always by fellow co-host Brian Heminger. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's an exciting time. End of the season, just kind of get to reflect a little bit. So, yeah, I'm just really, really anxious, excited, ready to roll, see how our boys did to close out the season.
We've got all the numbers ready to go, so we won't make you listeners wait any longer. As always, we start with the top 10 players as voted for by listeners and readers in the Cleveland Guardians system. Number one on our list is Daniel Espino. He did not get to play this season due to injury, and we wish him the best in his recovery. This brings us along to our number two man, and his name is George Valera. Brian, how did George finish off this season?
Yeah, George Valera had a nice little stretch, showed a little bit of power to close out the year. So are these numbers just first before we go over it? Is it the first bit is the last month and the next bit's the season? Or
correct.
Okay. So anyway, over the last month of the season, he finished very strong. He played 20 games / 239, 365, solid on base with a 479 slug. Good for a WRC plus of 112 over that month. Hit four home runs, a triple, three doubles, knocked in 10, scored 12. So yeah, just overall solid. Nothing insanely crazy, but well above average. And it looks like he finally kind of settled into a groove there at the end of the year, and he's setting himself up to hopefully finally make his MLB debut next season, where we're probably going to need him with question marks in the outfield as we've had the last few seasons.
And how did he stack up over the course of the full year this year?
So over the course of a full season, he hit 10 home runs, which is definitely a little low. Had a WRC plus of 84. With a slash line of 211, 343, 375. Now, the 343 on base is what stands out to me, because this was a season that was interrupted by off-season hand surgery. He had he came back, and as soon as he got back, he hurt his hamstring. And then once he came back from that, then he got the suspension with the umpire and the catcher. So he just had a very frustrating season where he never really got to settle into a groove until that last month. So it was nice that he stood out and was above average over the last month. But overall for the season, it was a struggle for George. So, you know, this was a chance for him to really stand out from the crowd and get that opportunity to play at the MLB level, because, you know, Cleveland's outfield was leaving openings for somebody to come up and take it, and he just couldn't do it. But it seems like if he can just carry that momentum from that last month or so into next season, we could be seeing him soon.
His off-season hand surgery was hamate bone surgery, right?
Yes, another hamate, which again saps your power as well. So that's
takes a little bit of time to recover.
Time, yeah,
and this is one of the reasons I wanted. You know, I wasn't sure what we were going to get when we put in the stats for the last month of the season and the entire year. But especially looking at his slugging numbers, he slugged 479 in 20 games to end the year. Looks like he's kind of back power-wise,
yes,
or close to it. And yeah, then you think about slugging 375 the rest of the year.
Yeah, the good news is it doesn't sap your power forever. I mean, Jose Ramirez broke his hamate, and he hit, you know, he's almost to 30 home runs this year. So it's definitely something that you can recover from and bounce back and hit just as well as before. It just takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think the thing that it might be important for fans to recognize is it's a kind of a funky injury in that there's a lot of time on the field that's part of the recovery back to where you were before you got hurt.
Yeah.
Like, obliques are kind of the same way.
Yeah. And you're able to play. It's just, it affects your swing. I mean,
yep.
it's, it's in your hand. It has to do with your grip and how hard you're able to hang on to that bat. And if you don't have as full control of the bat as you previously did, it's going to affect, you know, how hard you're swinging, how hard you're making contact, your bat speed, a little bit of everything. So he's able to go out there and play defense and throw the ball fine, but it is going to affect your timing and a little bit of everything. And but it was nice to see him finish strong. So just stay healthy, George. Please do not get hurt in the off season if you're going to play like international ball or something to stay fresh. We want you back and strong next year. So moving on, we've got a certain Brian Rocchio who split a little bit of time between the MLB and AAA levels to close out the regular season.
He did. At the AA level, at the AAA level, Rocchio slashed .244, .324, .422 to close out the year. That was a WRC plus of 84. He managed to mash 5 doubles and 3 home runs in that time. Like that, a triple, too. Looking pretty good overall with strikeouts and walks. Obviously, an 84 WRC plus isn't where you want to be, but he had a BABIP of 257, so maybe a little bit of bad luck in there. There's a little wiggle room. You never know. He was running wild as well. In 10 stolen base attempts, he swiped 6 and was caught 4 times. He had that moment where he was a little aggressive on the base paths up in Cleveland last night, and one wonders if it was just kind of still in his system that he's running hard. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I prefer to see guys make mistakes when they're called up because they're eager rather than a ball bounced off their head, you know?
Exactly.
For the full year, Rocchio finishes up at the minor league level with a .280, .367, .421 slash line. This is a WRC plus at 101. He walked 11% of the time and struck out 12% of the time. 7 home runs, but 6 triples, which helps out his slugging percentage a lot overall. Managed to swipe 25 bags, caught 7 times, so interesting splits there. The shortstop position in Cleveland, it will be interesting to see what guys make of the final opportunities they get here at the major league level in the last few days and what decisions the team makes to either shuffle these guys around or free up some playing time by other means. But an interesting season for Rocchio, really his first full year at AAA at age 22 as a shortstop, and he was a league average bat. Not so bad.
Yeah, not
definitely
amazing.
Definitely showed progression from last season.
Yeah, not amazing, but yeah, I mean, league average, very slightly above league average, and got some time at MLB, and looked like he belonged in terms of defense. Still needs, you know, to refine it a little bit on offense, but I liked his walk rates and strikeout rates at the minor league level this year. I mean, having for the season, an 11.2% walk rate is strong. Having just a 12.3% strikeout rate on the season is tremendous. Now we just got to get that to translate to the MLB level where, you know, I think he had like, what, a 60% strikeout rate the last time he got called up before he got sent back down. So just, you know, need to translate that, just not get overwhelmed, not play out of your depth a little bit. And I think he'll get there. I mean, he's still crazy young and, yeah, we still have question marks. I mean, I think a lot of people are Gabriel Arias truthers, but there's definitely still some room for somebody to come up there and snatch that position. So we're going to learn a lot over this offseason and moving on into spring training next year.
One thing I keep an eye out for in a player's stats, and this is very easy to go look at on, say, FanGraphs, is what happens year to year with their rate stats, especially walk percentage and strikeout percentage. Rocchio's got a dandy pattern going. When he broke into the system, he was walking 6% of the time, and that stayed steady pretty much up through his first year in AA. Then suddenly in 2022, he started walking close to 10% of the time. Dipped a little bit when he made it to AAA, but so did his strikeout rate. Mm-hmm. At the end of 2022. And then he was able to sustain the dip in the strikeout rate this season, the full year at AAA, and even improved it a little bit. both of those numbers have been trending in the right direction for a few years now. And while we do not wish to extrapolate, that is very real evidence of a player continuing to get better as he is challenged more and more, which is kind of exactly what you're looking for, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd say one thing that stood out to me as well was it seemed like he sold out a little bit of his power for contact this season. So he was trying not to strike out, and I think it cost him some of the home runs. I mean, he finished the year with, what, seven?
Seven.
So I know that he's got more power potential than that. I mean, I've seen him just launch one off of, like, Zach Gallen, you know, one of the better pitchers in the National League, so in spring training. So he's definitely capable of hitting home runs. I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, try to balance that a little bit more, because, you know, we don't need another slap hitter. And this is a guy that's athletic and young and talented enough to drive it a little bit more. So we'll see if he makes any adjustments in the offseason.
Guys fill out as they get older. Yeah. He's currently 5'10", 150, which, welcome to the club, Brian. I think he's a little bit more athletic than I am, though. God, I hope so.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about number four, the Kyle Manzardo?
Yeah, Manzardo got activated at the end of the season, and he was tremendous for Columbus. He made his debut with the Clippers, and he was the best hitter on the team over that stretch. He played in September. He played 17 games and slashed 254, 347 with a 651 slug. That is insanely good. And that slugging, which is just, this just blows my mind. So he had 16 hits. Out of those 16 hits, Matt, how many do you think were singles? Without cheating.
I typed the numbers in, Brian.
Can you remember?
It's three.
Yeah. Three singles out of 16. That's insane. That's insane.
He pretty much squared up everything.
Yeah, he had seven doubles and six bombs. So he was absolutely slaughtering the baseball. Like, do you have any idea how excited I am now? Because there were question marks. He wasn't having a great season at AAA, but he was dealing with some injuries, was dealing with some family problems. Like a sick family member or something that was really messing with his head. And it seems like, you know, he got activated and he was focused and he went out there and took care of business. I loved what I saw out of him. I mean, this is a guy that drives the ball. Now, it's not always going to go out of the park, but when he hits the ball, he hits it freaking hard. So as long as he's not just slamming it right into the dirt every time, this is a guy that we should be really, really excited for. And we've got him, you know, in perpetuity at this point. You know, he hasn't even made his MLB debut. Yeah, he hasn't made his MLB debut yet. And I'm expecting not only will he make it next year, I think he breaks camp with the team and he's a contender for Rookie of the Year next year.
We got a draft pick riding on you, kid. Don't let us down.
Because the whole way it works is, if you have a player on your team that's in, like, consensus top 100 prospects in all of baseball, and they break, and you break camp with them instead of leaving them down for service time for a month or two, if you break camp with them and they win Rookie of the Year, you get an extra first round draft pick. And I think if he stays healthy and plays in Cleveland all next year, this is somebody that could win Rookie of the Year. He's that impressive. Like, this is our first baseman of the future.
I also find myself very excited by these numbers, and in particular, 651.
Yeah, that 651 slug, we need slug. I mean, that's by far the biggest thing. I mean, how exciting was it, you know, watching Cleveland play the other day when they were blasting home runs, you know, seeing, you know, Jimenez crank some, seeing Calhoun crank some, just... It's so much more fun when you have a team that can get on base and then drive them in with that big power hit. So, and this is a guy that is going to cement the middle of our order for years and years to come. So let's make that front office look smart on the Savali trade.
Let's do it.
Yeah. And Moving on, we've got another middle infield prospect, Angel Martinez. So, Matt, tell us a little bit about how Angel Martinez closed out his season.
He rounded out the year with a .260, .329, .377 slash. That was a WRC plus of 76. It was in a 20-game stretch. Only managed 2 home runs, 1 triple, and 1 double. 16 singles, you know, and still getting the ball in play, still doing a decent job. Ended up being a 76 WRC plus, which isn't magical. I would attribute a lot of that to a 26.7% a 26.7% strikeout rate in that time, mm-hmm. which is a little bit higher than we've seen from him, and then a little bit higher than what you would perhaps want. So for the season for Mr. Martinez, and it's important to note, most of this is at AA. The split ends up being 437 plate appearances at AA and 154 plate appearances at AAA.
Mm-hmm.
He slashed .251, .321, .394, which averaged out to a 92 WRC plus, strikeout percentage of 20%, 8% walk rate, 14 home runs, which was neat.
Yep. That was one of the top home runs of our top 10.
Managed to mix in 5 triples and 23 doubles. So that's an interesting power profile to me. There's sort of this old baseball thought that for some hitters, doubles today become home runs a couple of years down the line when they get a little bit stronger. I know he's not necessarily scouted to have that kind of power. I'm not saying that I think that he's going to gain it, but it is something that could be seen in the future just by virtue of getting a little older.
Yep. You know, looking at Angel Martinez, he's definitely somebody that looks completely different now compared to how he looked when he debuted in the Dominican Summer League. So, you know, he's speaking of filling out. This is a guy that has filled out. He's on the 40-man roster now. So you look at some of those team photos he took. I mean, this dude's jacked now.
So we'll be interested to see how Angel Martinez builds onto things for next season. But I'm excited to hear about how our boy Chase DeLauder finished the year.
Yeah, a lot of really exciting things with Chase DeLauder. So to close out the year, the final month of the season, he slashed .340 with a .413 on base and a .434 slugging. So struck out just 12.7% of the time, walked 9.5%. BABIP was .354. And over that stretch, he played 14 games and hit 2 doubles, a home run, scored 10 runs, 9 knocked in, did not attempt a stolen base, surprisingly. And I think the most important thing, which is something that we'd been hoping for a very long time, was basically as soon as the high A season ended, he got promoted to double A. And let's check how he performed specifically at double A. But
while you pull those numbers
at double A, I got it.
Oh, awesome.
His walk rate exploded. So he played 42 games at high A with a 164 WRC plus. I mean, he was just insane. He was just crushing the ball. He gets promoted. All of a sudden, he turns into Mr. Patient. Now, granted, small sample size. He only played 6 games at AA. But in 6 games, his walk rate went from 5.7% to 18%.
That's a really good sign.
Yeah. And his strikeout rate dropped from 12.5% to 10.7%. So he had almost 8% more of a walk rate than his strikeout rate. Again, small sample size. But at AA specifically, he slashed .364, .464, .409. So he didn't show any much power, just hit the one double at AA. But hit the ball consistently, and his eye at the plate was tremendous. Which just goes to show what we've been saying all along, that he should have been at AA way sooner.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I think he might be our top prospect in the system at this point.
It was him and Manzardo. Really, really impressive debut. I can't ever remember a guy getting drafted and just immediately hitting this well at every stop, making it all the way to double A.
Yep.
And just thinking about that difference in the walk rate when he changed levels, I wonder if at the lower level there's so many mistakes over the plate.
Yeah, he was a free swinger at high A. He just wanted to just crush the ball, I think. I think he was just being extra aggressive. And yeah, I think he was a little bit more patient and selective when he got promoted. That could also just be a sign of, you know, working with those double A coaches. We've got a very experienced coach at Akron that's been there for decades. I don't know if, I think his name's Odur. So maybe that had an effect on him. I don't know. But yeah. He was absolutely nasty after getting promoted. Again, just a week's worth of games, but he looked really good. I can't wait. Like, I think he's going to, if he starts next year at double A, he's not going to be there long. Like, this is a guy that could be in Cleveland next year. Moving on, we've got our lone pitcher that actually pitched this season, Joey Cantillo. So how did Joey Cantillo finish out his season?
He gobbled up four starts and pitched 21 innings in that time. Had an ERA of 4.71. You know, FIP of 5.86, a WHIP of 1.67. What I do very much like is that in those 21 innings, he struck out 23 baseball players. The most concerning thing here, I think, is walking 6/9 to finish off the year. Walks have been a little bit of a challenge for him throughout the season. I think it'll be the most important thing to keep an eye on for him moving forward. He's got all the talent in the world, so we'll see how a full season at the AAA level, is it something that he can respond to, and hopefully we'll see positive signs for him from there. He's definitely got the stuff.
He's got the strikeout stuff. It's just about command at this point. I mean, he throws hard. He's got good movement on his pitches. He's tough to make contact with. He just, you know, walks too many guys at this point, and he's a little wild. So if he can get that under control, I mean, this is definitely somebody that's going to make an impact in our rotation. We'll see what he works on in his offseason. It's just all about refinement at this point, because he clearly has MLB level stuff. It's just, can he find that extra notch? Because, I mean, look what happens when you come up and you're not throwing strikes, they will take their walks. I mean, Tristan McKenzie had, what, 6 walks the other day in his return? So they will take their walks against you. You have to be around the plate. You can't just throw it a little bit off and hope that they chase. So
you have to earn the chases at the major league level.
You do. Like, that's what Bieber does. I mean, They know that if they're just sitting there taking pitches, he's going to pound the corners. So then expand that strike zone. So you gotta prove you can throw them, then they'll swing when you're not. So, but I definitely am still a huge believer in Joey Cantillo. I mean, this guy was our representative at the Futures game. He throws, you know, 98 miles an hour as a lefty. With wicked strikeout stuff, I think he finished the year with 146 strikeouts, which is really good. He stayed healthy for the whole year, which is even better.
Yes.
So 24 starts. So I think that's honestly the most promising thing of all. This was his first season in Cleveland that he pitched the whole season. Every other year, he's missed a significant amount of time. And for him to pitch the whole year at AA and AAA, look good, represent us in the Futures game, get a lot of strikeouts and have those flashes of just brilliance. I'm ready. We really don't have another elite prospect level other than Espino in that top 10 right now that is going to be ready to help us at the major league level next year. So, you know, we're going to need all the help we can get, and he's definitely going to be somebody that they're going to be calling on next season. If he can stay around the zone.
I don't want to put, maybe he'd make a good reliever out there anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just pretend I didn't even refer to it.
Yeah, I don't want to either, because he has enough stuff to be a starter. Like,
you really don't want to necessarily move a lefty who, if he can just get the walks down, is going to be a huge asset to the team.
Because, you know, Sam Hentges had a little bit of a similar issue, you know? He, lefty, throws super hard, has a good off-speed pitch, had the potential to be a starter, but was more effective out of the pen. It could happen with Cantillo, but I don't want to jump to that yet. I still want to give him every single chance to start.
You must tell us about Juan Brito.
Yeah. So Juan Brito started the year at high A, finished it at double A. Last month of the season wasn't his best, with just a .209 batting average in 20 games played, but on base, elite, .386. It was even higher than his regular season on base percentage. And then just a .299 slugging. But that on base was so high because he had a 19.7% walk rate over 20 games. So he was seeing the ball really, really well, just was unlucky with hitting it. Had just a .224 BABIP over that last month. But in terms of walks, he had 19 walks compared to 11 strikeouts, which is just plain nasty. And that's at double A, you know, that's against elite pitchers. So really, really impressive in that department. So even though he did not hit particularly well, he's still above, was still above average at a 102 WRC plus, finishing the season between high A and double A. He slashed .271, .377, .434 with a 126 WRC plus. Over the last month, he just hit the one home run, but on the season he had 14. So definite power potential there. Just a really good overall strong season. I think really the only area that I see any real concern with Brito was 15 stolen base attempts, only 7 stolen bases and 8 caught stealing. You know, if you get a middle infielder, you know, being aggressive on the base paths, you definitely want to be a lot better percentage for stolen bases than that.
One of the coolest stats looking here at his page, in the 5 games he had at AAA, 6 walks.
Oh, he played AAA?
Yeah, at the very end of the year he got 5
games. Even better. So he started the year at high A and finished it at triple A. I somehow missed that.
Yep, and he, happy birthday, Juan. We missed it by a few days here, but I guess he just turned 22 here.
That's another thing. Super young. Like, we got him for Nolan Jones, who was about 2 or 3 years older than him. So, and he's already at now at triple A and performing at triple A. And the thing that excites me the most about him is even if he doesn't stick as a middle infielder, because we've got such a backlog of talented middle infield prospects, the bat plays, the ability to get on base plays. I mean, look what Bo Naylor was able to do at the MLB level over the last month. Yes, he hit the ball well, but he walked at an extremely impressive rate. Like, he had great at-bats to finish out the season. His on-base percentage was one of the best on the team to finish the season. Even if the bat isn't there, but it is, the ability to draw walks is impressive. And it's not from him being passive because, you know, he's still making good contact and hitting the ball well when he is swinging. So, yeah, I like everything about Juan Brito offensively. I'm not a huge fan on the base paths. Everything else about him looks good. And I know it sucks that we lost Nolan Jones, but I think that he has been a nice little consolation prize. And this is a guy that also could be making his MLB debut next year as a 22-year-old.
I'm really excited because of the way Brito finished the season now. That his eye at the plate looks like it's going to be tremendous.
Yeah, and let me throw in another thing. If you remember all the way back in spring training, do you remember who led spring training in walks?
Was it not Juan Brito?
It was Juan Brito out of every player in spring training. So this has been something he's been doing, you know, all year. And at spring training, you know, that's with professionals at the MLB level too. So he's proving that he can do it. So I'll let you go back to making your point. Sorry, I needed to interject with that.
Guys who rely on walks tend to be less volatile in their output.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So yeah. It's nice to have offensive players who are a little bit more predictable in what they give you day to day, maybe, depending on what kind of team you're trying to build.
Yeah, having a really good eye at the plate kind of makes you slump proof a little bit. Now, granted, you're going to go through stretches where you're not hitting it as well as you should. But as long as you keep that strong approach and you have that good eye at the plate, yeah, you're not going to always hit the ball, but you can still get on base those times at the same rate in terms of taking your walks. So, and eventually they're, you know, when you're not hitting the ball well, maybe they'll throw you more strikes thinking that you're not going to hit it. That's when you start, you know, get back out of that slump. So
that's when it's dinger time.
Yeah. So I think that's something that I think is a huge plus with Juan Brito. Like him and Bo Naylor are two of our guys that really can draw a walk. All it really takes, you know, get on base, see what happens. Now, you know, Juan's not going to steal a lot of bases, but just getting on base is so important.
Agreed. This brings us finally to our last two players on the list, Wellman Francisca and Ralphie Velasquez. Now, these guys didn't play since we last met because they're in short season ball.
Yep.
But we do have full season stats for them, and they're kind of ridiculous.
Really good full season
stats. They're really good.
Yeah. So, Wellman Francisca finished the year slashing 316, 419, 500 at the Dominican Summer League. Good for a WRC plus of 144. BAPIP is 395, and you might be like, oh no, he got lucky. But you know what? At the lower levels, BAPIP, having a high BAPIP is a good thing because that means you are just crushing the ball and you're fast and you're getting on base. That actually is a sign of a good player, having a high BAPIP. So, you know, no, I loved everything I saw out of Wellman Francisca. I think this kid is an absolute stud. He slowed down a little bit near the end of the season, but you know, that's going to happen your first professional season. You know, this is the first time he's played that much baseball all his whole life, and he's still 16, 17 years old. So next year he's going to make his debut in the States, and I'm hoping that he just crushes it and gets promoted up to full season. Who knows? I mean, maybe he looks so good in the spring that they just debut him at full season. That's unlikely, but he's got the talent to do it.
And it's just, they have moved guys a little bit faster than you might expect in the system before.
Yeah.
We do love an aggressive placement. So we'll see. I love your point about BABIP. It's something I've come around on a little bit more from when I really started digging into baseball stats maybe 10 years ago. Is it true that a 395 BABIP is unsustainable for anyone? Yes. But he did it over 40 games.
Yeah.
So he still did it. Like, you have to hit lasers in order to do that.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. You can't do that on ground balls.
Yeah, and you're not going to be able to sustain a 395 BABIP at, you know, the MLB level, but if you're doing it in the lower minors, I mean, they're just not reacting quite as quickly to you hitting the ball defensively, but that just means, as you mentioned, lasers, and that's exactly what's happening. Just really rock solid contact. And he got on base at a good rate, too, with a 13.4% walk rate. So he was selective as well. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, the only thing I didn't really love about Francisca was the 19.6% strikeout rate. But we'll see how he continues to refine his approach when he's in Arizona next year.
Yeah, for some guys, it doesn't increase as they move up through the system.
Yeah.
Other guys even end up improving. So
a lot of guys improve as they get promoted just because, you know, they continue to refine that approach. And, you know, sometimes what really helps a player is, you know, learning more about themselves and what pitches they're best at hitting, and then just waiting for those pitches and being more selective on when they're going to swing. So he's still figuring that out. It's so early in his career, but I've really liked what I've seen so far. Speaking of liking what we've seen, tell us a little bit about our 2023 first-round draft pick, Ralphie Velasquez.
He had a nice little debut. Granted, it was only six games, because that's when they were able to work him in, but he had a 151 WRC+, thanks to a juicy slash line of 348, 393, 739.
Oh, that's pretty.
739. three doubles, two home runs, seven runs, eight driven in, three walks. Those are just nice numbers for a six-game stretch.
Yeah.
I'm really, really excited to get some more generated statistics from this young man and his baseball exploits in the near future, Brian.
Yeah, I can't wait to see more of him. He's definitely debuting in full season ball next year. He clearly has proven that he's good enough to hit at the half season league. So there's only one level to go next. So full season it is. Let's see what he can do. I mean, Ralphie Velasquez, it's not like he was just slapping the ball around. I mean, he was crushing it. When Ralphie Velasquez was hitting the ball, it was absolute nukes. So the fact that he had almost more home runs than singles.
It's pretty good.
That's really good. It's just like with, you know, Manzardo. You know, this is a guy that I am extremely high on. I mean, he definitely was one of the best high school bats available and making Cleveland look smart, because there were some questions like, oh my God, you know, there was this guy and this guy on the board, and they took a guy that, you know, is a catcher. But if we can get a catcher that can hit like this, you know, just imagine a tandem with Bo Naylor, where one's DH'ing and one's catching, and they're both just jacking the ball out of the park. I'm really excited to see what he can do. So just keep it going, Ralphie Velasquez. If he keeps hitting like this, he could be a quick mover too.
Too early to play the how quickly could they move up through the system game. It's been six games.
Yeah, it is. But he's definitely going to debut at single A next year. I mean, if they wait, it just makes no sense. I mean, he clearly can hit at the Arizona Complex League. So he'll get his chances in, you know, the spring to, you know, do a whole bunch of complex games. But when they get around to the start of Lynchburg, he better be on that team. If not, get him on Lake County if they want to really be aggressive. I doubt they do that. Yeah, I want to see more and more of this guy. He is impressive.
This brings us to our top five of the month.
Yeah.
Essentially, in this case, number one on our countdown this time. And this is guys from anywhere in the system. So it doesn't matter where they play. We're just trying to highlight the guys who had the best overall performances during this stretch of time.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Manzardo is a familiar name. Just such good baseball. I think this is the second podcast in a row. So that's basically a 6-week stretch of games in which he's been one of the best players in the system. It's good. We are really good. In approval.
Exactly. Now, speaking of approval of their exploits, let's talk about Will Dion.
It's bonkers. You know,
yeah, this was a guy that was on my corner cupboard last year. Somebody that I was following and really, really enjoyed. And he had a great season and started the year at high A, finished it at double A, and finished strong over a 2-game stretch. He pitched 14 and 2/3 innings, had an ERA of 0.61, allowed just one run on 7 hits. Just absolutely nasty. Had a 35.3% strikeout rate, walked just 0.6 per 9, 2% walk rate. So, yeah, really, really liking what I'm seeing out of Will Dion. Overall, on the season, he was the best full season pitcher in Cleveland system. Now, granted, you know, we had some guys that were really good and got promoted and pitched in the majors, like Gavin Williams and Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen. And if they had stayed at AAA all season, they probably would have had better numbers than Dion. But all in all, really, really impressive finish to the season. And it looks like he's going to be ready for AAA next year. And if he can, people keep saying, you know, at some point batters are going to figure him out because he's, you know, not exactly a hard throwing lefty. But that deceptive motion and everything that he's doing is still working as he continues to climb.
Crafty. And
yeah, he's crafty. And yeah, I just can't wait to see if he can continue to prove it and make it to that major league level and continue to prove it there. So just keep proving him wrong, Will Dion, baby Kershaw.
Next up on our countdown is Franco Ailman.
Yep.
Now, he had a pretty standout September in which he earned 3 saves in as many opportunities, 3 2/3 innings. But what was the well, before we get to the super cool thing, he had a negative FIP. It was negative 1.09. Yeah. But what was the fascinating thing that you showed me earlier, Brian?
He didn't give up any runs over the month of September. And Matt was like, you know, that's pretty good. But, you know, granted, that was only over like, you know, 3-4 performances. So sure, that's good, but it could have been better, right? What really stood out for Franco Ailman was he got promoted to Double A in June and did not give up a run. Didn't give up a run from the end of June to the end of the season. He did not give up an earned run all 3 months.
He's just decided it's not part of his game anymore, yeah. Brian.
Like, this is a guy, he was our 10th round pick in the 2021 draft. So we took him the same draft that we drafted Tanner Bibee and Gavin Williams. And he was another guy that was in that mold of Florida starters that we were really going after. He was actually the third Florida pitcher that we selected, I believe, believe it or not. He debuted as a starter, did not go well. They transitioned him into the bullpen, and it just clicked.
Seems so, like something might be working now.
It's working, yeah. Like, if you wanna get your mind blown, look him up on FanGraphs and just check from the beginning of July to the end of the season on his stats. During that stretch, he had 38 strikeouts, 5 walks, ERA 0 in 20 appearances, 24 innings pitched. Did give up 5 runs, none of them earned. But yeah, 38 strikeouts over 20 appearances in 24 innings, 5 walks, ERA 0. Throws in the upper 90s.
Had a nifty strikeout rate in his last 3 appearances here of 19.64.
Yeah. So it's over that 3 month. So yes, he had a negative FIP, which is just absolutely bananas over those last couple 3 2/3 innings. But over a 3 month stretch, his FIP was 0.98. His WHIP was 0.58.
0.58.
Yeah. Like, this is a dude, like, we keep wondering, you know, who might be that next big thing that'll help us in the bullpen. It's Franco Ailman, man. We need to talk about him more. Like, this dude is nasty.
Yeah, after you pointing out what he's done to finish off the season and just sort of seeing the raw numbers.
He's still pretty young, too. He's 23, just turned 23 a few months ago. He's 6'6". So, yeah, I like everything about him, man. Like, he is impressive.
It's also an excellent baseball name, like Franco Ailman.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy is if you look at his, if you expand, like last year, he was a starter for a little bit. His ERA was 6.31 at Lynchburg. He was not a good pitcher last year in 24 games. Then he debuts this year at High A, exclusively a bullpen guy, over 20 games, stretching 31 innings, his ERA was 5.51. And then he gets promoted to Double A, and his ERA is 0 over 20 games. It's bananas. Like, he just became a completely different person after getting promoted. Like, he went from forgettable to the best reliever in the system, like, overnight.
I don't want to speculate too much, but it would be interesting if he learned a new pitch or started.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but something clicked. Like, maybe he just needed somebody to help him trust his stuff. But yeah, he has been absolutely disgusting.
The next man on our list goes by the name of Juan Benjamin. He has a 364, 417, 409 slash line, good for a WRC plus of 140, 8% walk rate, and an 8% strikeout rate.
Yeah, excellent.
Just a pretty nifty stretch of baseball.
Middle infield prospect. Basically spent the whole season at low A Lynchburg, but had a really good season. I liked what I saw out of Juan Benjamin. Like, he's not on anybody's like elite prospect lists, but you know, he's a guy that can play second base, third base, a little shortstop if you need him to. Basically, he's played 98 games this year at Lynchburg and had a 108 WRC plus, so was above average. and he's been above average every level he's ever played. You look back and Dominican Summer League, he had a 101 WRC plus as an 18-year-old, and then last year played in the Arizona Complex League at a 154 WRC plus. So gets promoted to full season and 108. So just one of those guys that just keeps performing. And a little under the radar, but maybe we should be starting to pay attention a little bit more. And, you know, he's not a big slugger, but, you know, had 3 home runs. And I think what really stood out for him this year was the speed. After having 9 stolen bases in his first 2 seasons combined, he had 24 this year.
Ooh, that's a nice jump up.
Yeah, I like that.
Our final player is Mr. Jordan Jones.
Yeah, Jordan Jones finished the season strong. Had a stretch of 7 1/3 innings pitched and did not give up a run. So that is always good. Had a FIP of 3.96, walk rate 22, strikeout rate 29.6. So got a little lucky allowing some base runners, but did not give up hits. Over those 7 1/3 innings, just 1 hit. I think that makes up for, you know, giving up a few free rides. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's pretty impressive. He's a guy that is pretty difficult to make contact with.
I like that he hit a guy, too. One hit, one hit batsman. I hope it was the same guy.
And, yeah, he was a guy that spent the entire season at Double A. He was a 2019 draft pick. Taken in the 16th round. So, had an overall really good season. On the year, he made 37 appearances out of the bullpen and had an ERA of 2.00. So, definitely somebody, you know, worth keeping an eye on.
I think this might be the second time. I don't know if he's ever cracked the countdown before. I could go back and check, but I'm not going to at this time. But I think he might have been one of the guys who got at least one time the, hey, he was really close because he mm-hmm. didn't give up any runs or something. So I'm going to be interested to see what he does next year. Yeah, I would assume that he'd get to go to AAA to start things out. So yeah,
this was by far his best season. You know, in 2021, he debuted in Lynchburg. 2022, he went to High A Lake County and by the end of the season got promoted to AA. And then this year, spent the whole year at Double A and dominated. So really, really impressive. So I expect to see him at Triple A Columbus next year, possibly earning a chance to pitch for Cleveland if he can perform well there.
Brian, would you like to open the cupboard at this time? The corner cupboard?
Yes, I would. And for those that don't know what the corner cupboard is, Matt and I each pick a hitter, position player, and a pitcher that is not in the consensus top 20. And we kind of follow them along throughout the season and see how they stack up. Maybe they earn their way into that top 20 with their performance over the regular season. So my hitter was Joe Olampe. He was a third-round pick by Cleveland as a position player outfielder in the 2022 draft, I believe, and spent pretty much the entire season at High A Lake County this year for full season baseball. And over the last month of the season, he struggled. So slashed just 172, 265, 276, good for a 56 WRC plus. Did hit a home run, stole a base, but otherwise was relatively forgettable. So not the best closeout to the season, but overall, I would say he had an above average full season debut in Cleveland. Let me double check and see what his overall numbers were. Yeah, overall he slashed 235, 336, 332 with 21 stolen bases. WRC plus just barely below average at 94 on the season. How did your next dude do?
Daniel Schneemann didn't finish off the year quite as well as perhaps Schneemann's demons would have liked, but that is fine. In his last stretch of games, he slashed 191, 269, 298. It was a WRC plus of 42. Not a great BABIP during that stretch. Struggled a little bit with strikeouts at 23% against a 7.7% walk rate. But it was an awesome season overall. And I'll be interested to see what happens this offseason. Hopefully we'll see him back in Columbus. It would be a neat story if he ended up getting some time at the major league level.
Yes, sir. And then my pitcher, Parker Messick, made two starts, lasted 10 innings total. And in those two starts, he had an ERA of 3.27, allowing four earned runs, walked three, struck out 14. So rock solid finish to the season. I think overall, looking at the numbers, he may have been the third best pitcher on the season in the Cleveland system. So a solid pick by yours truly for a pitcher to follow and could be making his top 20 debut.
Yeah, I really liked what we saw out of Messick this season, and I want to see a little bit more dominant stretches from him, but nonetheless, that's a weird critique for a guy who had a great season, right?
Yeah, started the year at Lynchburg, got promoted to high A, and didn't really slow down. So that's a very impressive sign. Let me double check and see what his numbers were between levels, if there was a major difference. But yeah, so at Lynchburg, he had 13 starts and had a 3.02 ERA. When he got promoted, his strikeout rate actually increased, made 13 appearances again, so about the same amount of time, actually pitched more innings at high A than he did at Lynchburg. What increased, though, was he did get hit more. The strikeout rate increased, the walk rate increased a little bit. He got hit for a lot more home runs at high A. At Lynchburg, he only gave up 0.16 home runs per nine innings. That is ridiculously low. At high A, he gave up 1.4. So ERA jumped from 3.02 to 4.43, but I like the spike in strikeout rate. So hopefully he can just continue to refine that pitching, find the middle of the zone a little bit less, and keep, you know, making guys miss.
On my side of the cupboard here on the pitcher shelf, we had Jack Leftwich, who started two games, also had a piggyback appearance, amounted to 13 and two-thirds innings pitched, and in that stretch he had an ERA of 3.29. So another pretty nifty stretch of games for him. Pretty much stretched all the way back out after he came back from injury. His FIP was a little wonky at 5.25, but his whip was a 1.02 because he only allowed 10 hits and 4 walks in that stretch with one hit batsman. Strikeouts were a little bit low, but there's something to be said for balls in play generally being weak contact. He did give up 2 home runs, but all in all, it was a really strong finish to the year for him. And I'll be interested to see what they do in terms of placement, whether they want him to stick where he's at least to start the year, since he was injured for a bit during the second half, or if he gets promoted directly to the next level. He could be a starting pitcher to continue to keep an eye on, and I wonder what we could have seen from him if not for the injury, but that's baseball. Most importantly, he was able to get back and get healthy and finish strong. Now, do we have any particularly noteworthy transactions here at the end of the season that we wanted to highlight?
Nothing real crazy. The main thing was that Chase DeLauder got promoted to Double A from High A. There were a whole bunch of smaller transactions, like players being activated, but a lot of the guys that got activated, it's more because they had to, because the season's over. You don't just stay on the injured list in the offseason. Nothing real crazy. And Brito making it to Columbus from Akron. Those were really the two standout transactions at the end of the season for me.
They both did pretty well. Very exciting stuff. I believe that brings us to the end of the podcast.
Yes.
And more or less the end of a listening season.
Yeah.
Alas, if it's all right with you, I have a wild E.E. Gammings. I don't even know if this is a poem, Brian.
Ooh. I can't wait to see this.
All right. Friday. Tanner Bibee's number one Desert Island CD. Friday Pain by Cole and the Muncie Five.